All right, good. So, again, our topic for today will be still coupled thermal and electric conduction in the nanostructures. And I want to remind you once more about the first midterm that is taking place next Friday and a review lecture on next Monday. So, where we are. Regarding the last lecture, we are mostly concerned of how those different equations of mechanical or physical response become coupled from the very principle of their carriers. Okay, and particularly we look at two equations that looks very similar, Fourier's law and Ohm's law. One, however, is talking about thermal conducting heat, and the other talks about conducting electricity. Right. So if we examine them carefully, we see that they are all carried by similar particles, similar type of particles. And if we want to calculate the amount of again, charge or energy that is carried over, we now know that what we need to use is really, you know, the quantity, for example, energy, power, momentum, or charge, okay, carried by each particle times the number density of particle times the velocity corresponding to each of the particles, right? And you can write this for any other physical, you know, or system that you like to understand or study. And particularly if we want to find out the net flux, then we have to now sum them or integrate over all possible states. And in this particular case, we are looking at any given, like, you know, surface or interface, and we want to count all the possible momentum that are available, or at those momentum, what are the total number of particles that carries energy or charges? Okay, so this is density of states, and this is really the Boltzmann distribution that we are, you know, interested. Okay. Now, from that, we also introduced the so-called Boltzmann transport function. Okay, basically, it's almost like you applying fluid mechanics to the large cloud of particles that really carries the energy or charge, right? And we say now, if we focus on a local position, the change of the density of particles, or in another word, if we focus on one particular particle, the change of one particular particle at a particular state now is determined by really convection and acceleration terms. Okay, they have to be balanced at one location. The overall mass, momentum, or energy has to be conserved. So that's really the principle behind this. And we said if the system is not far away from the thermal equilibrium, then the rate, it comes back to equilibrium state can be described, you know, with a time constant. Okay, this is really the assumption we're looking at in order to solve this otherwise more complex equation. Okay, so from that we further applied this Boltzmann transport equation to really the original system, original problem, which we apply a voltage across a nanowire, right? And now we use this perturbed distribution function, okay, within this really volume of interest. Now we are able to estimate the current, and not surprisingly, we find that Now, the number of particles that are carried over through a certain space due to the electric effect is also counterbalanced by now the change of current the particle density, because there is a change in the particle density, so they intend to diffuse back, right? So this is really the key point. The overall current that we are looking at is the sum of migration, which is due to electric field, and diffusion, which is really moving against the original imbalanced null concentration, right? How is this applied to the real world? This is what we are trying to talk about today. And just simply applying the concept of really coupled heat conduction and electron conduction, there are two famous effects discovered in very early time. One is so-called Seebeck effect. At back in 19th century, Seebeck first found that when he heat up a wire, he was able to observe, as far as this temperature difference is maintained within a wire, he was able to observe a voltage difference across it, right? So you think about it, you now change the distribution of charge carriers, right? You start to build up a voltage because they carry charges, the charge separation. So Seebeck coefficient effect was observed. And slightly later, an engineer Peltier actually find that now if we try to apply a voltage across a material, you actually can carry heat away. This is like what we just talked about before, right? You can carry the heat away. And there is a so-called Peltier coefficient, basically describing the amount of heat that you can carry away per applied current. Okay? So this is really the electric cooling. Now, where those things find applications nowadays? They find applications in sensing temperature. For example, thermocouples. Many of you used the thermocouple before to measure temperature, right? So you can use that for temperature sensing. You can use that for cooling, like really electrical cooling. Or you can use that inversely for the Seebeck effect. You can really harvest energy. You can really charge your battery now by placing the Seebeck device next to a heat source. Right? So, for example, why people are getting more and more interested in thermoelectric cooling? Thermoelectric cooling actually sees very little effect when you make miniature systems. For example, you can really make a portable cooler like this. Okay? This portable cooler can be integrated in a compact and flexible form. Right? You do not need any pump, like in the bulky heat exchangers, you need really fluidic pumps to drive the coolant. But here, there is no coolant, really no liquid coolant needed. And there is actually a compatibility with the current CPU or IC circuit industry, so they are also very interested in using this cooling for example, overpowered computers, or even to really detect or capture better images using thermoelectric coolers. Okay, but more applications are actually found really in the energy industry. Right now you hear energy as a really a buzzword, right? Energy is almost like the new business opportunity now. So harvesting waste energy is a very important factor, a very important impact for thermoelectricity. For example, you can look at a foundry. Okay, you cast irons, and there are a lot of heat. Yeah, really wasted just maintaining the irons at the liquid state and or cast metals at a liquid state, right? And there is also a significant amount of heat, for example, that are really just dissipated when you are running an engine. The typical thermal engine, for example, if you drive a BMW or Mercedes-Benz, even that upgrade a car, you only can harvest about 30% of energy from really the theoretical Carnot limit. So the rest is all dissipating out, and this is about, surprisingly, it's about 15 kilowatts. Right? Yeah. So you really can do a lot of things, not just making the for air conditioning or driving your audios. Right. So even if 10% of that can be harvested or recycled, it's a big impact. Right. So that really is why thermoelectric coolers or thermoelectric energy converters are gaining more and more interest. However, we don't see that many yet, right? Even now, I think BMW and Benz already claimed some modules on their cars. They are mostly using that for example, cooling your driver's seat. Okay, put a Peltier chip on other type of harvesters around the really the driver's seat for personal temperature control. But this is not yet compatible with any of really the engines that you are using. And why is that? This is now a time to revisit what is the Seebeck coefficient and what is the thermoelectric effect that we are looking at, right? So we already see that when we derived this electric current, there is a accompanied term which is really due to temperature or temperature gradient. Right. If we want to now cancel this current, if the net current is zero, so now this equation becomes very simple. The electric field is made solely to balance out the change in population of electrons. Right. So now from that we can estimate really the open circuit voltage output. Right? The open circuit voltage output is really just due to the diffusion of electrons available within the system. And from that, we can say that Seebeck coefficient is really just the derivative of this voltage with respect to temperature gradient. Right? Partial E, partial T will give you the answer. And we find that it is proportional to KB over E, which gives you really the unit of Seebeck coefficient in the scale of about 86 microvolts per Kelvin. Okay? Actually, most of the materials are more or less within that range. But what makes the difference between the materials are really the temperature dependence of the available conducting species. Okay. Since it is a really temperature-driven effect, if everything is flat, if the Seebeck coefficient, if the amount of carriers are always the same, then you don't see much difference when you are driving it. So Seebeck coefficient only increases when you have really large activation energy. In another word, if you compare metals and a dielectric, which one will give you a higher Seebeck coefficient? If you have a metal that is conducting even at a room temperature, and a dielectric which will produce more and more defects when you elevate temperatures, which are really becoming possible for electron to conduct through, which one will give you more Seebeck effect? Did I hear any answer? Use your intuition. Metal or dielectric? Metal? Why metal? Okay, metal has a high electron density, but it does not have a high activation energy, right? In another sense, if you have a metal wire, you measure it at 30 degrees, and you measure it as 100 degrees, the conductivity does not change by order of magnitude. But if you do that with a dielectric, okay, when you get active in more defects, then the conductivity can really change by order of magnitude. And that indicates that activation energy is high, actually, for dielectric. Okay? And that leads to higher Seebeck coefficient. But Seebeck coefficient is not all the things. Because when you are driving this circuit, when you are driving this system to really extract heat away, naturally you are producing heat. As you see from really the coupled equations, right? So you are producing heat by what? Ohmic resistance, by ohmic effect. So you have to make sure that the heat you extracted is significantly more than the heat you produced inside the material. Right? So this is why there is a non-dimensional term, non-dimensional measure that is being created for Seebeck effect or other cooling that is depending on thermoelectrics. So the process is very simple. Now you compare the electronic current and, I'm sorry, this is actually a thermal current, right? Which is driven by now the Fourier effect. But now you have these two process, and the Seebeck effect and the Peltier effect are really just symmetrical or comparable. So now when we put all these things together, we want to make sure that the heat of conduction by electricity is dominant. So we try to compare these two. Now this top is heat conduction. Essentially it's a heat conduction through charged carriers. And the bottom one is really the heat conduction as an overall system. Right? So apply you on the top, you can almost see this is a Seebeck effect times Peltier effect, right? At a particular given temperature, and compare that with really natural heat diffusion. Okay? Why we care about figure of merit? Let me show you the result. Right? If you look at the typical materials, the left hand side, okay, metals, semiconductors, you can really have the Seebeck coefficient changed by even a factor of 10 or more. But this alone does not allow you to determine which one is really the most effective. Only when you really compare the competition between Seebeck effect conductivity and thermal conductivity, which is kappa, which we are looking at here. Now we show that the overall peak of the so-called figure of merit only shows up for semiconductors. Okay? So in other words, you need to have a good conductivity, good electronic conductivity. Even though Seebeck coefficient, you know, shows up as a square dependence, but the most important thing is still to have a balance between, you know, good thermal good electronic conductivity, and compare that with thermal conductivity. Okay. Now, this really leads to a comparison between all the available thermal conductive device, thermal electric device, against other available competitive engines or, you know, cooling systems, right? So if you try to plot this figure of merit, okay, onto a chart, again, you'll find more discussions about how to estimate the efficiency with the reference of this paper. I already uploaded onto the Compass website. So you can see that for power generation, thermoelectric generators only produce about less than 10%. Okay. Compared with, you know, what is available for the so-called Carnot cycle, right? Instead, if you look around for, again, engines, as I said, the engines typically produce about 30%. It's running at about 30% of Carnot efficiency. So, in other sense, this is not yet there. It's not that, you know, attractive yet. And in terms of cooling, we see a very similar trend. The amount of heat you can extract out by thermoelectric device is not yet as compatible. Okay? They are behind. So the game, as you can see, is to move this so-called figure of merit up. If we can find ever a material that is beyond one, for example, if you have something that is of a figure of merit of one or two, then you make the device or system more attractive and more competing. Okay? Right, so now here leads to nanoscale engineering. So we already see that the Seebeck coefficient conductivity really, the product of these two really determines how much heat you can really carry by applying a voltage. And thermal conductivity, on the other hand, is counterbalancing this process. So if we want to optimize this, okay, we need to really look back into the possible route. How can we change the conductivity? How can we change the Seebeck coefficient? How can we change the thermal conductivity now using nanostructured materials? So it turns out that all three, okay, Seebeck coefficient, electronic conductivity, as well as the thermal conductivity, are all subject to change when you are using a nanostructure. So, we already learned now the density of states in different materials actually change, right? We kind of emphasized this density of states a couple of times. So, where density of states take into account? We already learned that the density of state can play an important role for both conduction, electron conduction, right? Ohmic's law, remember, Ohmic's law actually has an integral form of the density of states in there. And there is also a density of states when we estimated the thermal conductivity, right? The thermal conductivity is roughly proportional to heat capacitance. Right, and we show that heat capacitance can change based on the density of states. based on the density of states available in different structures. Now, the game is very interesting in that if now you look at these two problems, one is the density of states of electrons, and the other is the density of states of phonons. Right? Mostly, heat are still conducted through the lattice vibration. So these two corresponds to two different landscapes. Corresponds to two different landscapes. In terms of phonons, the mean free path, okay, can be really as long as 40. I'm sorry. Can be as short as 40, 30 nanometers. And in terms of electron, the mean free path can be as long as microns or several hundreds of nanometers. Now, here we can play the game. We can really make a material that appears as a good electron conductor, but a poor thermal conductor. A good electron conductor, but poor thermal conductor. And now, what you can do is really to you introduce more scattering to phonon, right? So they seize more resistance. You reduce the conductivity of phonon, and you can really increase or maintain a good conductivity of electrons instead. Okay. By doing so, there are some really predictions. I won't talk more of other mechanisms like how to increase the Seebeck effect. But by doing so, there are really a comparison, for example, of a semiconductor material of bismuth, and just by changing the dimensionality, confining it to nanowires or nanodots, the figure of merit, the so-called ZT, actually can change by a factor of two or better. And this is really demonstrated later in the nanostructured thermoelectric materials. You can see most of advancements comes around the same year, 2002 and 2003, in which they used different, again, really one-dimensional or two-dimensional nano confinement, okay, which changed the Seebeck coefficient from, this is almost a bulk, okay, less than 0.8, to now the reported value of about 2.5 to 3, right? And if you look carefully, I think right now the most effective attempt still is in reducing thermal conductivity. In other words, you can really make a guess of how small you need to control the size of those nanostructures. You don't have to go to angstroms. The key point is to maintain it around 10 nanometer to 30 nanometer. Okay, within that range, you'll be able to scatter phonons very effectively. And the figure of merit can really, boost up at room temperature. Okay? So this is really the attempt of using nanostructures to increase the Seebeck or increase the thermoelectric effect. And I would like then to switch gear and talk about something, of really biomimetic in nature. Okay, really inspired by biological discoveries. For example, in 2002, there is a report in Nature regarding the thermal sensors found in shark. Okay. So, next to the mouth of shark, they find a very interesting gel-like sensor, which is connected to neuron to the other end, and this gel actually turns out to be quite very effective for temperature change as low as, again, 0.001 degrees. This is way better than probably any of the thermocouples that you use right now, right? And in terms of voltage, they're really looking at about, you know, 60 microvolts range. And it's not really, you know, a fancy material. It's really a hydrogel with all the ion conduction, right? So basically, you can change the same concept from driving electrons through the channel to driving ions or driving other conducting species. So as far as this, the species carries heat and electricity at the same time, you can make use of that for thermal sensing. Right? This is one example. And the other example that I like to share with you today is about hornet. Okay, small hornet. So I think nobody likes hornets. They stink. But there is something that is very, very attractive from them. This is actually reported back in 2003 as well, when again engineers and scientists used a thermal imaging or thermal camera to observe hornets, particularly those busy hornets in the hot summer days. To their surprise, they find that the skin of the hornet remained cool, at least about 3 or 4 degrees cooler than the environment. Okay, this is really the interpretation of this thermal image. The blue area indicates cooler zones, and you see really this is associated with the hornet. Okay, so it's rather surprising. So what they really did is now they tear hornet skin. They look at the hornet skin and they find that this is really like a laminar structure, a laminar composite. Okay? And there are many pores inside. And many pores inside. And those pores are really of the dimensions of basically submicrons. Okay? So they speculate now this structure is more or less like a Peltier chip. Right, in which you are now able to, you know, stack up and impede heat away. But yet, at the same time, you can drive, or kind of extract heat through electric effect. Okay, this is what they found. So the Seebeck coefficient is high. That's really, you know, consistent with that this system is a poor conductor. But you can see the thermal conductivity is really low. The thermal conductivity is probably, you know, as low as the typical polymers or, again, hydrogels or porous hydrogels. So you can really now, again, one of your homework that I'm going to give you is to estimate what's the figure of merit of this type of system, okay, of a hornet, and see if they really can make a good use of this for personal cooling, right? So with that, I'd like to recommend a few papers to you. So the first one is a review about how you engineer these different nanostructures in order to change their thermal conductivity, okay, change their basically figure of merit, and what will be ultimate really limit using this type of nanostructure systems for energy conversion. And now you can really take a look at hornets from this paper, 2003, and if you are interested in more of thermoelectric materials, take a look of this special issue, same issue in MRS bulletin, which really discussed applications including space exploration. In the case of space exploration, you can see that the areas of the satellites are basically rockets that are in front of or are directly subject to thermal radiation will become hot, whereas the other side is remaining cold, right? And in the really outer space, the temperature, the colder side, can be as low as a few degrees, a few Kelvin. And the hot side sometimes reach, more than 400K. So that's the largest temperature gradient you see, and that's why thermoelectric effect find a very, very good really application to drive all the satellites and really rockets. So, please take a look at that, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay? Very good. Any questions? Yes.
I think this is a video of the lecture, but I missed the what would you do to the conductor to reduce the conductivity of the phonons, not electrons?
Oh, okay. Why don't we try to do conductors, or what do we do? What do we need to do to reduce the conductivity?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. So the key point is conducting heat is not only through electrons, but also through phonons, right? When you apply a temperature put a sample on a temperature gradient, then you start to vibrate the phonons too, right? Those phonons will carry heat actually more effectively than electrons. But we want to lower that, right? We want to lower that. However, we want to lower this without changing the conductivity, electronic conductivity of the material, right? So we have to really take a careful control, because if you make quantum dot like structures, nanometer structures, then you change the electron conduction too, right? You change the electron conduction. However, there is a window in between. If you look at carefully about the phonon scattering, basically the mean free path of phonons are significantly shorter. Mean free path of phonons are significantly shorter. They are impacted, or they are more subjected to defects or cracks. Right? So if you, for example, chop your wire into 40 nanometer segments, then phonons will see more and more reflections, and they can now become really impeded. Whereas electrons can travel longer distance. They don't even see the boundary effect yet. Okay? So now if you take a nanostructured material like in that way, you're gaining now on a good conductivity but a low thermal conductivity. Right? So the game is really rejecting heat diffusion. Right. You get it, right?
So the defects have to be longer than the mean free path of the phonons, but shorter than the mean free path of electrons.
That's right. Okay. Right? So then you start to see coherence for phonon, but for electron, it does not change much. Right? Question?
I mean, when you shrink down your whatever, your example, you gave wires, the electrons will see the boundary of the wires, and the mean free path should also decrease.
Yes. Yes, that's right. So mean free path of electrons and mean free path of phonons are both changing, but it's a matter of which changes more significantly, right? Remember an important fact: the velocity of phonons is what? Is kilometers per second. Velocity of electron is 10,000 kilometers per second, right? So now, if the collision is taking effect about the same time, then electrons travels, you know, 10,000 or 3,000 times or 1,000 times longer than phonons. Well, this is not true. You actually has a significant reduction too, but now the boundary scattering for electrons are not as effective. Right? Are not as effective. So usually when the grain size are smaller than, again, about 50 nanometers, you start to see decreasing of electron conductivity too. But this is really a subtle window. You have to make sure your material is good for electron conduction, but not good for thermal conduction, right? And you know, it does not apply to all materials in all cases. You have to study the particular material of interest and design the right, again, scattering carefully. Any other questions? I think those are very important points, very, very, very subtle points when you are treating these nanostructures, right? Maybe likewise, you can start now reversely by engineering the metal wires. Right now, you see the examples mostly are engineering semiconductor wires. Okay, you chop semiconductor wires, you block this conduction. Maybe you can do this now for metal wires, and try it now to really boost the seebeck coefficient. Right? There are different games that you can really play. So the advantage of using metals or porous or structured materials are really trying to lower the heat conductivity as much. Right. So if you can really design this, I think you will find a completely new approach. Right. So it's not unique to one particular material. This game can, this study can be applied to, for example, silicon, can be applied to germanium or gallium oxide, can be used to other materials. But the range that you are looking for to scattering phonon without scattering electron will be different. Yes?
2-6 materials are usually what they use for thermoelectric materials. Why is there
anything that makes them specifically good for thermoelectric properties other than 3-5 or some for metal oxides? Yes, this is a more tricky selection. I do not have the slides with me here, but in general, there are requirements for the band structure. There are requirements for the band structure. The most important part that you are concerned is actually if you went through all the notes of this paper, of the first paper, you will find that the most important contribution of thermoelectricity is the electrons that are at the bottom at the bottom of conduction band. Okay? So now, depending on whether it's a direct bandgap material or indirect bandgap material, you will have a difference in this number of electrons available. Okay? And if the Fermi level is high or the Fermi level is low, you will end up with also different you know, characteristic length scale. Okay. So that is also something that deserves attention. If you are studying some electric conversion, then I think this paper is a must read. You will find a lot of you know, good insight from there. Yes.
Is there a theoretical maximum for the figure of merit?
Oh, that's a very good question. So the theoretical maximum actually will be likely arrived when you almost completely blocked. Let's go back to this. Almost completely blocked the thermal conductivity from phonon, only leaving behind thermal conductivity for electrons, right? And from the original electronic current, we see that there is a conductivity to thermal conductivity ratio. Now, because they are all provided by the same carrier, right? The theoretical limit is almost a constant. Okay. Because they are all from the same carrier, so there is a constant. I think you can find this. I forgot the exact name, but there is a rule. Okay, it's called Weissmann-Franz rule that really, or Weissmann-Franz law that really make direct comparison. So that will give you an ultimate figure of merit. I think it's somewhere like 6 and 7, between 6 and 7. So there is a, you know, great room of improvement. There's a great room of improvement. But it's really now open in the space. So far, most of commercially available materials are at most at 2. That's the best available. And you can see it's still a challenge to make all those type of materials cheap enough. Now there are only few groups at RPI, the Rensselaer Polytech Institute, at the JPL, basically, you know, Caltech Jet Propulsion Lab, and I think a few, you know, German groups who can really reproduce their result at this high, you know, figure of merit. Still a big challenge of really, you know, preparing those materials for large volume for bulk, right? So that's really the state of art. But yeah, you know, we are optimistic that maybe in next 10 years it will be somewhere around 3. So that's really the state of art about thermoelectric. Any other questions? If not, I think we are right on time to call off today. And this week we won't have a homework, but I will give you a sample exam that you can take a look, and we will discuss on Monday. Okay? All right. Thanks.
They are still working on that. I think the best way is I will try to post all this audio to Contrast first.
Okay.
Yeah, so that will make this whole thing.